Meeting to order, are we on? Okay, great. My name is Mark Fry, I'm the chair of the Finance Committee. In attendance also from Finance Committee are Mrs. Westfall, Mr. Hayner, Mr. Richardson is absent. Mr. Hanson, Ms. Stowe, and Mr. McCann, as members of council, are also in attendance, as well as mayor, members of administrative staff, including Mr. Schreier, who's our director of finance. The purpose of this evening's meeting is informational in nature. We've got three significant firms where we have the city's money invested. I think that's the appropriate terminology for this. We have investment accounts with Fifth Third Securities, with UBS, and with SJS. And basically, in fact, there was another one over the weekend with another bank failure. So I thought it would be helpful and informational to understand what we're doing with the funding that we have, how this is compared to what's going on with banks, and just to provide general information to us and to the wider public, and give us the opportunity to ask a few questions as well. So with that, Mr. Schreier, I'd be happy to throw it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Fry. I asked the chair to comment on this. Staffing and our banking side, and then Brian Carter handles the investment side of this area. So,
good evening, ladies and gentlemen. As Toby said, my name is Dave Kane. I work for Fifth Third Bank. I am in the government institutional world. I will translate that. That means I don't work with businesses that make a profit. I deal strictly with government entities throughout Northwest and Northeast Ohio, being municipalities, towns, K-12 school districts. But I'm on the banking side, on the operating accounts. But with Mr. Fry mentioned, with everything that's been occurring in the news, pick a weekend, it seems like we've been reliving this 2008 all over again. But I just want to be present. I know you're really interested in the investment side. But if you have any questions on the banking side, I want to be present to answer those and make you feel comfortable with everything. And on behalf of Fifth Third, we appreciate the business that we have with the city. Our goal is to do the best that we can for you and the business. I'll turn it over to you.
Please. Thanks.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Brian Carter. I'm a 23-year veteran of Fifth Third Securities within the Capital Markets Group. My day-to-day task is solely devoted to local government. So the City of Sylvania is a long-standing client of our Capital Markets Group at Fifth Third Securities. I specialize in local government, school districts, counties, throughout Northeast Ohio, Northwest Ohio, and Central Ohio. I wanted to provide you guys a brief summary of how we conduct business with the City of Sylvania, and then from there, if you have specific questions for me, that's why I'm here tonight. With all of the turmoil in the marketplace, it's very important to know and understand, for a non-financial background, is that your money is designed to be fully FDIC insured or have the collateralization slash backing of the U.S. government. So any or all of your investments that is currently held in custody through Fifth Third's platform, your money is fully FDIC insured. Individual consumer deposit, time deposits that are FDIC insured under the FDIC threshold of $250,000 or less, or in government-sponsored enterprise bonds that have the implied backing of the U.S. Treasury. So Dave already hit on the turmoil we've seen in the last 60 or so days in the financial markets. I want to make sure that everyone understands that your money is 100% safe and secure based upon anything the Ohio Revised Code 135.14 allows a local government to invest in. You are very limited as to what those investment parameters are. And both of them focus on credit quality, safety of principal. Obviously, in this rising rate environment, rate of return is important, but I do believe being good stewards of taxpayer money, preservation of that principle is very important. We have seen significant rise in interest rates in the last 12 months exactly. It's very important in that process from a liquidity management perspective, that you have a rather short duration of that money so that the finance office is able to take advantage of current market conditions as it's been changing. The city's investments that Fifth Third is custodian of is right around 1.5 years of duration. What that 1.5 years of duration means is that at least 50% of the assets that we hold in custody would be slated to be maturing within that 1.5 year time frame. And the other 50% would be longer than 1.5 years. In a rising interest rate environment, the shorter the duration, the better, because that means more of your investments are maturing sooner to take advantage of market conditions. With that, please, I'm here to answer any questions that you have.
So I'll give members of the committee, this is Wes Long, Mr. Hain, and the opportunity, or other members of council, the opportunity to ask questions. I've got some questions, obviously. I'm sure you're all shocked.
What sort of reporting do you do to Toby? What sort of reports do you give him about where you're investing money and how that's performed?
We have very detailed cost basis reports of the portfolio, specifically for the assets held in custody of Fifth Third. From a planning perspective, Toby knows from a cash flow perspective what his interest receipts will be month over month out to 5 years of final maturity, which is very helpful for your liquidity management. We also provide a detailed inventory of the cost basis of each individual security in sequential order by maturity date. The importance of those detailed cost basis reports is to make sure that you have the ample information for liquidity management, but also to make sure that from a credit perspective, that we are, because there's three separate investment accounts, the more detail that we provide allows Toby to make a prudent investment decision when we bring it to his attention.
And Doug, I'm provided that on a monthly basis, the beginning of each month.
I assumed. Leslie, are those public records? I'm just curious. Is there an exception for those?
I would have to, the only exception that jumps to my mind off the top of my head would be if there's any sort of trade secret business exception, but yeah. I would have to look at them and
you could make that kind of
see.
Assertion, I suppose.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't know that anybody has ever requested them.
So I know that your Fifth Third is one of those, what do they call you, mid-sized bank? With it? Or regional?
Super regional,
yeah. So you guys are in the crosshairs these days. What are you hearing from your regulators?
I don't know what the regulators are saying. I'm, to be honest, I'm too far down the total pole.
Yeah.
But dealing with governments and with all the turmoil that has been occurring, so Fifth Third, over the last 5-6 years, their goal has been to be well positioned for any economic downturn. So we've taken a very, as a bank, very strategic approach. Actually, we received information today internally after everything with First Republic. So what they look at is how much of your deposits could be risk running on. Over the last 5-6 years, strategically, we've been looking to build and go ahead and develop our operating accounts. And I say that as opposed to opening up a savings account for Mr. Hanum.
Mm-hmm.
And you park $10 million, we consider that hot money. Rates change, you want to move that somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Much like the city's accounts, their operating accounts, you've got regular deposits coming into it, you're paying bills. Those are stickier, if I could use that term. Those funds don't tend to fly out because whether it's the city or any other business or an individual, that money is in use constantly, so it's not going to leave right away. So 60% of our deposits for the entire corporation are covered by FDIC balances currently. part of that is because of the retail network.
60%?
Yes. Of all the super regional banks, we're number six in the list with that percentage. And that's really based upon our retail system. Retail system is what our branches are, is what we term retail. But all the individuals accounts that we have, as you can imagine, the bulk of those are below $250,000, so they all have FDIC coverage. But because of the number of retail accounts in that consumer business that we have, that gives us an advantage of being at a higher rate. The other side note that's been going on in the industry lately, without naming names, so then they look at the liquidity of the investments. So the funds that aren't covered by FDIC, bank invests those. What they sent out to us today, 99% of all of the bank's investments that we hold are eligible for sale. So we don't have things that are out there 20, 30 years that we can't get to. So it's more of a shorter duration, much like cash flow that you look for at the city when you need it. Ours are shorter durations, so we can access that. If we have, I don't want to use the term run, but if people want to withdraw their money, we can access
bankers that. Never like to use that word.
Yeah, no, I didn't say that. I asked you a question.
You good information.
One comment I wanted to add, too, as it relates solely to the investments, too, is that from a custody of assets perspective, the assets of how your the investments are held in custody, they're off balance sheet for Fifth Third as a company too. I think that's very important to point out that your assets are held in third party custody, so they're completely segregated from your day-to-day banking relationship with Fifth Third. One has nothing to do with the other.
So Mr. Carter, when you say custody, you've said that a few times. What does that mean? So you guys blow up, Fifth Third Securities goes away, they shut you down, whatever.
Yes.
How do we get access to those dollars?
That's a very good question, that's why I brought it up. Your assets are held in third-party custody that Fifth Third utilizes. National Financial Services are owned by Fidelity. So you would have full access to your investment account if Fifth Third ceases to exist tomorrow.
So Fidelity is... I guess I'm just trying to figure out the money. So I'm trying to follow the money. So it goes from you guys to Fidelity. These bonds or whatever these are held by Fidelity. How does that work?
All of your assets are held in custody in the name of City of Sylvania's tax ID. The Fed is aware of your investments because they're held in the city's name. We are required to have third-party custodian by law. So I'm assuming that your other investment relationships is done the same way. So in other words, Fifth Third broker-dealer cannot self-clear your investments and hold them in custody as a company. You have to use a third party to do that for safety.
Got it. Mrs. Westfall, Mr. McCann, Ms. Stahl, any questions?
I did add one point, Mr. Pry, back to your questions, I forgot. The other thing, and I don't want to assume, but under the Ohio Revised Code, government entities, so municipalities, counties, K-12 school districts, Ohio Revised Code wants to make sure that should the bank fail, that the taxpayer money is not at risk. So under the ORC, government funds in Ohio have to be collateralized through the Ohio Pooled Collateral System, which is administered by the state of Ohio Treasurer. So besides the FDIC limits and everything, your funds, your operating funds and your checking accounts are covered with collateralization over the FDIC limits by investments that the bank holds with a third party, again, so that we can access it. And we report daily to the state treasurer's office in the Ohio Pooled Collateral System. So should the third fail, the city has access to their operating funds as well.
Thank you. So, Mr. Carter, you mentioned government-backed securities. I'm assuming you're talking about Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac kind of stuff?
Federal
loan bank. Okay. Got it. So, I know we've got the city has a little bit of flexibility on whether we're buying treasury bonds or whether we're investing those other government-backed entities. How do we make, do you make that call? Do we make that call? How's that call made on what we're doing and where we're pushing the money? I know there's limits, but how's that being done?
In the primary market, as a security is created at that point in time, depending on the yield that is obtainable on a government-sponsored enterprise issuance, if that yield is higher than buying a U.S. Treasury, we would bring that to Toby's attention and say, this investment is proven for these reasons. So before I have access to doing any reinvestment, the finance office knows what I'm doing ahead of time. I don't have discretionary authority to just go out and purchase. Hopefully I'm answering your question, but essentially it's based upon the yield of time, what makes the most amount of sense for the exact same maturity.
So
they wait for my approval.
Yeah, I understand. Thank you. That's helpful. So you mentioned that there were other entities that you work with. What other entities does Fifth Third work with, your local, other governmental institutions here locally, school districts or other municipalities or what have you? I'm talking about from the security side. I'm sure Fifth Third has an account with almost everybody on the banking side.
I'll use Savannah since we're in Savannah. Savannah City School District is my valued client relationship. I act as their financial advisor for here locally. We just met with the district here today, actually, to be here this evening. I have several like that, but I'd say Savannah City School District is the closest to here.
So what are, because one of the things I always like to learn from others when I have the opportunity, and I'm sure we're doing lots of good things, but are there other communities that you're working with that are doing things a little differently to deal with these kinds of vagaries to secure, because yield is obviously, security is number one, but yield is number two, right? Are other communities doing things any differently than we are, or is it all pretty much the same?
The Ohio Vice Code, all communities are held to the same standard as to what investment they have access to. The only distinctive difference from a performance perspective, if I'm answering that part of the question, is strictly a timing issue. If you have the liquidity to reinvest funds in a rising rate environment, from a performance perspective, you'll perform better because you're locking in higher rates of interest from a yield perspective. Am I answering your question?
I think where he's going is, how are we doing against other municipalities with that performance return against any fees and such?
I can attest to SGS and UBS assets because I haven't seen their portfolios.
No, I'm sorry. We're talking about other municipalities, not the other.
Well, I'm saying this based upon what
just,
I know,
just from your perspective.
Your account being a 1.6-year duration portfolio, you are exactly where you need to be because in a rising rate environment, the more it's maturing the sooner, you're able to take advantage of the changing times. If or when rates decrease, having a 1.6-year duration isn't going to hurt you either. The shorter the duration when rates drop means you're going to lose your yield that you're locking in at higher rates. So to answer your question, you're right where you should be from a duration perspective with the information that the Fed has access to with what I'm responsible for.
So we're Goldilocks, not too hot, not too cold.
Mr. Fry, we have not had any issues with liquidity.
Right.
We actually have been able to invest more money on an annual basis.
Right.
Didn't have to worry about selling anything. So as Brian was saying, that allows us to get a little better yield in the investments that we're in because liquidity has not been an issue.
Okay. So you guys aren't running a charity, I'm assuming. How do you make money on this?
That's a very good question. We are not a discretionary money manager. So you are not paying Fifth Third Securities
investment advisory or management fees. No custody fees either. Fifth Third Securities Company only is compensated on new investment transactions. So there may be a point in time, which in 2023, we haven't had a single investment transaction. Fifth Third Securities hasn't been compensated anymore for the portfolio portion that we are responsible for. We only are compensated from new investment transactions, not on the basis of assets under management or on investment performance.
So when you, when one of these situations occur, where there's another 250 grand that's rolling off, you're going to go out and buy a CD, or you're going to buy a bond, or whatever you're going to buy.
Yes.
You're working with Toby, figure out what that's going to be, and you, and he says go, and you go, right? What's that fee?
I'm going to correct you slightly. It's not a fee.
Oh, fair enough.
The underwriting concession, if you're saving the primary market issuances, which for the Fifth Third assets, historically, you've only bought primary market issuances. The compensation that we are paid indirectly from the issuer as the security is created, there's an underwriting concession that the underwriting firm charges the issuer to raise money. So, for example, if City of Savannah has their own bank and you need to raise money, you're going to hire a third party to help you raise that money for your lending needs. When that, assuming that you need money for a year, you create a CD for 1 year. The fees that the third party charges City of Savannah Bank to create that certificate of deposit, when investors purchase it, they go to a securities firm to buy that security. That securities firm is compensated out of the underwriting fees that the third party charges the issuer when that security is created. So Fifth Third Securities Company is only compensated when you're making a new purchase, number one. And secondly, that compensation does not come out of or is deducted from the interest receipts the city receives from that security. It's paid from the issuer when it's created.
So we buy a T-bill. The feds are, you're getting paid by the feds?
T-bill's different.
Okay.
The T-bill, which you don't currently own any T-bills, but the way a T-bill purchase works is in the primary market, I see live screen on where a yield is. Our compensation, once we know what the yield is of a T-bill, from there we would deduct 4 or 5 basis points from what that yield cost is to acquire the T-bill. That's the only compensation that we receive. That's different than the primary market illustration.
So do the math for me. $500,000, 4 or 5 on a T-bill. What's $500,000? What's the fee on that?
Boy, not much. If you bought a 1 year T-bill for 5 basis points on $500,000, $250.
Okay.
It's very minimal.
Okay, because that helps me understand that structure.
Primary market is very easy and transparent. That's why I gave you guys that example, because that's my history with the state thus far.
Right, so if we, government-sponsored entity, GSE, which is one of the things that we've utilized with Fifth Third Securities, correct?
Yes.
So the GSE structure is similar in nature to if we went out and floated a bond or did a, basically that payment is coming from whoever's floating, or are we paying 4 or 5 bips on that?
In that situation, if you have primary market issuance, the compensation that they would get at time of purchase off of a new issuance is fixed when that security was created. That's different than your T-bill question, because that would be a secondary market purchase.
Okay, so there's really 3 examples. So you mentioned Fifth Fidelity being the holder, the other entity that's holding?
Third-party custodian.
New words for me. Third-party custodian. So I do energy. I don't do banking, as you can probably tell, or securities. So this, what does Fidelity charge for this purpose?
Custody of assets is completely separate from the investment transaction process. But they don't, but to answer your question, the Fifth Third Securities Company
works with Fidelity for that custody service, and they do not charge our customers for holding their assets in custody.
So they charge you guys? Because they're not doing this for giggles, right? I mean, they're making money somehow.
I wasn't prepared to answer that question because it's not what I do day to day.
Fair enough.
I can assure you, you aren't paying a customer.
And that's fine. I mean, I'm just trying to understand the mechanics. I know that they've got trillions of dollars under management and all that good stuff, but at the end of the day, I've seen their buildings in Boston. They've got some serious structures, and they're not built for nothing. So I hear what, but I understand that, you know, in the end, if the city and the taxpayers aren't paying it, who cares? From that perspective, I get it. Any other questions, members of council? Because I know we've got other people that are waiting to talk to us about it as well. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate the time. Gentlemen, thank you very much for the opportunity to listen and learn. And, you know, I don't know if we'll have follow-up questions, but if we do, we'll work through Mr. Schreier to ask them.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
It's only just begun, my
friend. It began.
Okay, Mr. Fry, I'd like to introduce Kurt Ludwig. He's been with the city. He's at SAS Investment Services right across the street here in the city. He's been handling the city's investments since before my time, so he's been here quite a while. Served on a charter board for the city. So I'd like to welcome Kurt. Thank you, Mr. Schreier.
What's good to see many of you. It's been quite a while since I've been up at this podium here, but
lucky you.
I find it's not my favorite spot to stand. But before I get started, you know, first and foremost, thank you for your time tonight, but more importantly, your time and your commitment to the community and your leadership. A lot of exciting things going on in the state, and I'm proud to be a resident here, so thank you.
So for those I have not met, my name is Kurt Ludwig. I represent SGS Investment Services. And SGS Investment Services is a registered investment advisory firm. We're completely independent. We're not tied to any brokerage firm or banking institution. We're located in Sylvania, Ohio. We're formed by Scott Savage in 1995. We currently have just over $2 billion of assets under management. And my role within the firm is I'm the director of institutional investment management. And I've been working with public entities in managing fixed income portfolios for 30 years, and the last 20 of those at SJS. More importantly, I've been working with the city of Sylvania, as Mr. Schreier was talking about, for quite a few years, so since 2005. So we're grateful for this opportunity to work with you for the past 18 years.
I'm going to figure out which button to hit eventually. So through the portfolio design, we start with investment guidelines. So the investment guidelines of a portfolio for any public entity within the state of Ohio starts with the Ohio Revised Code. Then from that standpoint, each entity can look at their objectives and what's important to them, and then design and write the investment policy statement on those guidelines. As an advisor, we look at those investment policy statements and acknowledge them and report on them every year and update with finance directors. The portfolio is made up primarily of just government bonds. We do have a money market sweep account, but government bonds, what's unique about those positions is that they're held in the name of the city, but also held at the Federal Reserve Bank. So it's not held
at a brokerage firm. The brokerage firm serves as a custodian, so in this case, Charles Schwab is the custodian, and they report on those individual bonds, but the bonds themselves are in the name of the city. So the types of bonds, we address treasury notes and government agencies. For government agencies, they're Federal Home Loan Bank, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Federal Farm Credit Bank are the types of agencies. In the portfolio, by both the Ohio Revised Code as well as your investment policy statement, you're allowed to have up to 100% of the portfolio in government bonds, both treasuries and agencies. All the bonds that we purchase are intended to be held to maturity, so we're not actively buying and selling the bond. We buy and intend to hold to maturity with a maximum number of years of 5. However, we rarely ever go past 3, and right now we don't have any bonds with maturity past 3 years. And as I mentioned, we do have a government money market fund. So the government money market fund is made up of all government bonds that are short-term in nature, under 270 days, and has a $1 price to it. And it's just served to catch interest payments and maturities, and then we reinvest the proceeds from that holding fund. Under investment objectives, you frequently hear safety, liquidity, and return as the primary objectives. We look at that and also take that a little bit further and define what that really means based off of the needs of the money. So for your daily operating needs, we're not going to be looking at buying long-term securities within something that needs to be used within the next couple of weeks. So we're looking at separating, when you separate your operating from your longer-term investments, SGS is looking at this from the longer-term perspective. So when we think about safety, it's managing interest rate risk, so that's the volatility of the bond when interest rates change, and then security diversification, so your credit risk exposures. For liquidity, it's, again, making sure you have funds available for future needs. So if we're notified that there's some future need at a point in time, and we want to ensure those dollars are available when that time comes. The other part of liquidity is high market liquidity, and that means just making sure that if the bond is needed to be sold prior to maturity, that we can sell that in an open market very easily with competitive prices and many purchasers in that market. And then lastly, return on investment. This one's always, again, one that's loosely defined within the investment policy statement. It's capturing a fair market rate of return for a given interest rate cycle. Well, as we go through interest rate cycles, since this is not an actively managed portfolio where we're trying to index and buy and sell frequently, what we're trying to do is make the proper decision during every maturity. So as everything comes due, it's evaluating the interest rate market, evaluating the yield curve, and then applying strategies given that market environment. The two primary components of that safety feature, the one is interest rate risk. So we use duration, which is a component a measurement that's used to measure the sensitivity of interest rate changes. So in this case, the portfolio, the City of Savannah's portfolio, has an average duration of 1.4 years, which means for every 1% change of interest rates, you can have an expected principal change in value of about 1.4%. We look at this as in comparison, just for a point of reference, of a 1 to 3 year index, which is the U.S. Treasury Index, which has an average duration of 1.88 years. So when you compare that, it really is saying that it's a more defensive stance, it's less sensitive to interest rate changes. So if interest rates are rising, we want to be more defensive, because when rates rise, the values often fall. So we're being less aggressive and more defensive when we're shorter our duration relative to some standard benchmark that's relevant to public entities. The other part is the issuer weightings. The types of issuers are U.S. Treasuries at 14%, Federal Farm Credit Bank at 17%, Fannie Mae at 13%, and Federal Home Loan Bank at 55%.
The 55% is a bit heavier than what we normally would go, but as a post-pandemic situation, Federal Home Loan Bank was required to issue a lot more debt in the marketplace, and the reserve requirements are not reserve requirements, but the funding needs for Fannie and Freddie Mac, which are typically very high, were fairly low. So the bonds available was much heavier than Federal Home Loan Bank, so as a result, the portfolio has a bit heavier weighting than what we normally would like.
What would you normally like?
Under 50. In a perfect world, if they're all issuing on a consistent basis, by 35%. A perfect world.
And why them, not treasuries or one of the other categories?
No, I'll get to that actually. But
okay,
it
fair
is,
enough.
It's spread related. You know, like the yield advantage over one security over another, but that is
okay.
A question I'll get to that too. The other risk management perspective is maturity diversification. So if we look at breaking up into every 6 month interval, 0 to 6 month, 13.5% of the portfolio comes due. As you go out, you can see the heaviest areas are 18 to 24 months and 24 to 30 months. Those are a little bit heavier weighted because we had a large number of bonds that came due kind of post-pandemic when interest rates went from about 1.75% down to 0.25%. There's a 2 year span in there where they sat at 0.25%. So I've got more charts to show you, but as a result, we had to go out a little bit further at that period of time to pick up something better than 0.25%. The account performance, you can see there's three different bars or three different colors here. The dark blue represents the portfolio return for the city's portfolio. The gold represents a three-month T-bill index, which is equivalent to or very similar to Star Ohio, which is a pool of assets that can be used very easily for public entities in Ohio. And the light blue line is a 0 to 3 year treasury index. And you can see that the portfolio tracked very closely up until the pandemic. And it's the sharp moves, and it's the magnitude and speed of the change of rates that if we're not buying and selling very actively in that, we're positioned where we weren't able to adjust the portfolio directly in that environment. So the shocks of interest rate really caused some of the distortions when rates fell and then when rates turned and went right back up last year. So those create a little bit larger gap, but we're right back on top of the benchmark of the 0 to 3 year treasury index. But we typically view your tax and fair market rate of return if you can stay between those two indices. This is just a chart showing, you know, during those extreme periods of time, as we reached the early part of the pandemic, Federal Reserve lowered interest rates basically from 1.75% to near zero. And then as of the late part of 2022, Federal Reserve started raising interest rates and have increased rates by 5% over that period of time, which is it's kind of a historical level that we haven't seen those types of moves. And at the starting point is one of the challenges of that, because typically you have an interest rate coupon that your bond is producing that can offset some of that principal volatility. But if you have a coupon of 0.25%, but you get a 1% change in value, you're not getting that type of offset. And so we look at two-year treasury yields during that same time frame. And two-year treasury yields give you a good indication of what the market is pricing for the next 2 years may look like. And if you look at the June of 2021, you can see that the market was still anticipating about 0.25% rate of return for a two-year period on an annualized basis, which 3 months later, they started raising interest rates and raising very aggressively. The difference between the Fed funds rate and the two-year treasury note is the market sets the price on two-year treasury note on a daily basis. So it's market-driven yield, even though the Federal Reserve does, the Treasury issues them, but the market drives the yield. Federal Reserve controls the price of the overnight money through Fed funds rate. So this is just really showing kind of the shock of the market, that the market was not anticipating the timing of and the aggressiveness of what the Federal Reserve was doing. This is why we believe it's important to have a buy and hold approach. Because the life cycle of a bond is you buy it at a face amount of $1,000 per bond. And the lower part of this graph shows a change of interest rates during the time period you own it. So you buy a bond with the best expectation of managing it, given the current market environment. But as we know, things change, and when they do change, our position is that we want to make sure that whatever we buy, the issuer can pay you that principal and interest along the way. So in this situation, it shows interest rates starting at 1% dropping, and at the top chart, the value going from 1,000 to 1,100, and then interest rates starting to move up, and the value dropping to 900, and then interest rates continue to climb higher over that period of time. And as it does, you can see the red line being the price, and that coming back to 1,000. So it compresses,
even though it falls in value, the closer it gets to maturity, it's got to pay that out at full par value. So this supports a buy and hold approach. So anything we buy is intended to be held to maturity. So the components of the decision making process, and Mr. Fridas will get to your question in the second area there, but durations of persons, I mentioned earlier, that measuring the sensitivity and how quickly we respond during the market environments is the first component.
We can be more defensive if in a rising rate market, or we can be a little more aggressive in a rate market where rates are declining. When we get to, and we measure that by the optimal points of yield curves. The second part is the security selection. This is the diversification. Who are we buying the bonds from, or who's issuing that, who's responsible for paying that interest and principal. And so we look at multiple areas. And looking at the investment policy statement, we have the choice of looking at CDs, commercial paper, government agencies, and other types of investment vehicles by the policy guidelines. So we measure that against a treasury note, since treasuries, that's your risk-free rate and for whatever term you're looking at. So we're always measuring what that excess return is, and if it's favorable, then we will look at what's that premium on a historic basis, or what that premium is, kind of given that current market environment. So oftentimes, the decision to buy a government agency is because the premium is paying you to take on a little bit more of that credit risk, because agencies and treasuries actually have the same credit rating. They're both AA plus by AAA, and they have an implicit backing by the government. In 2008, both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were taken under conservatorship by the government. So lastly, it's monitoring the risk. So we're constantly, in each situation, measuring and monitoring how the portfolio is responding. And this helps you identify risk in the portfolio. So if the portfolio is doing one thing and the benchmark's doing something different, you have to be able to identify what's causing that change. So as long as we understand the risk that we're taking with the portfolio, and we understand the market's dealing, it's acceptable risk, and we understand how and why it's happening. But if we don't monitor that, you never know. So even though we buy things and hold maturity, it doesn't mean we're not paying attention to what's happening in between. And then lastly, how it all comes together. So every decision we go through, Mr. Schroyer and I make we come back with a recommendation, and we'll share how that individual bond that we're recommending will impact the overall portfolio. So every decision is based on the current market environment and how that decision impacts the overall structure of the portfolio. So with that, I'll answer any other questions you have.
Mr. Hannon, Mrs. Westfall, other members of council, you have questions.
You did a nice job. That was a helpful presentation.
Thank you. Kirk, how flexible are you able to be with the, you know, holding a bond to maturity and you know, your ability to rebalance if needed?
There's a lot of flexibility to that. So it's really, again, how the bonds are performing. We don't call it active management, but we call it hands-on management. So if there's an opportunity, as an example, if interest rates were actually decreasing in a short period of time, and the value of the bond went up in value, but longer-term rates had extended higher, we would have an ability to sell a bond at a profit and take a gain and actually be able to plug in a higher yield. So we do have that opportunity to do that on occasion. And so we will take a hands-on approach for that. And if there's a credit issue, so if there's a concern about Federal Home Loan Bank, or we start to see that, we monitor how the market's reacting and the pricing. We view the market as being a really good
identifier of risk. And so we would look at, and we monitor all the different agencies that we own and how the market's reacting to treasuries and at different parts of the treasury yield curve to determine where that risk might be. So,
okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, first of all, thank you for the presentation, Kirk. We certainly appreciate that information. A couple things you mentioned is that this is held by a custodian, which is Schwab.
Well, it's actually held at the Federal Reserve Bank.
Okay. So the Federal Reserve Bank in Cleveland is basically holding the money or holding the bonds or whatever we've got through SGS?
They're a book entry, meaning that it's actually held within a database. There's not a physical bond that's being held.
Right.
So they're a book entry at the Federal Reserve Bank. And I don't have the answer if it's Federal Reserve Bank.
Well, so if you guys go poof, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but if you guys go poof, because that's one of the things why I wanted to educate, let's make sure that, and I assume what the answer is, yes, we're covered, but I still think it's helpful to have a better understanding of it. So if you guys go poof, how do we know that we're going to get access to our money? We're not going to be tied up in court for the next 3.5 million years, wait for all this to get sorted out.
That's a great question, Mr. Fry. There's several layers in here, and when we built through it, when Scott Savage structured the firm, he wanted to separate custodian work from advisory work. So we're completely independent. We don't hold a single security. We will use a third-party custodian, and in this case, it's Charles Schwab. So they serve as the reporting capacity. We serve simply to advise and execute transactions on behalf of the city. So the layers of protection are first, if SJS goes poof, then the city of Sylvania, and Mr. Schroyer actually is named as the agent on record at Charles Schwab, he would actually have the full instruction to be able to transact bonds if SJS did not exist as the advisor. And at any point in time, SJS can be removed as the advisor by contract, and Mr. Schroyer can take over control of those assets.
Okay.
So if Charles Schwab, the next question would be if Charles Schwab goes poof.
We got bigger problems.
We got bigger problems, and they would be considered as one, just as we're witnessing what's going on in the banking industry, the too big to fail, and Charles Schwab, as one of the largest custodians in the country, would likely fall under that category that they would be protected.
Now, there's Charles Schwab, the bank, and then there's Charles Schwab, the investment side, which is where this custodian money is held.
This is held at the custodial level, or at the brokerage level. So,
okay.
They typically, a lot of Schwab accounts use Schwab Bank for their sweep vehicle. Public entities in Ohio cannot use...
For their what vehicle?
Their sweep vehicle.
Sweep, okay, got it. Sweep vehicle. Sorry, I'm...
So,
here you.
So in this case, the Ohio Revised Code protects public entities... in that case, and so as a result, the structure that we use for money market vehicles are government-approved money funds.
So you mentioned 1.4 years is the duration right now for our portfolio with SJS. So 16 months, give or take, if I'm doing my math correctly. Why 16 months? Why not 20 months, or why not 12 months?
Another great question. That's why when we look at establishing a benchmark, so using that just as a frame of reference for risk, to say roughly 1.88 years is an appropriate level of risk for a public entity that invests in bonds in that 1 to 3 year range on a typical basis. So if we want to be a bit more conservative in our interest rate sensitivity, the decision is, say, allow it to drift shorter. The other component is because if we don't have a lot of funds coming due, then the maturity and average duration, just by the nature of time, shifts lower. So when bonds come due, we look at taking the next bond and how that will impact. If we have the ability to pull that duration out further, we will. And that's the one of the elements that we monitor on each transaction, is how to adjust that.
So you mentioned during the presentation that during the pandemic, there was quarter point interest rates, and then things started going, almost on an exponential increase on rates. and we had to go out further on the duration curve in order to get some additional, how much additional yield do we actually get by going out on the duration curve?
15 to 20 basis points, depending on, again, going out 3 to 4 years in that range. It was, again, it was.
So we went from 0.25 to 0.4, 0.45?
Somewhere in that range at that time.
Okay. Then I'm asking everybody pretty much the same questions by and large as everybody will, but you're only on the one piece of it. Obviously, you guys are doing this to make money. How do you make money?
We get paid a fee, a quarterly fee, to serve as your advisor.
Okay.
So that's how we get paid.
And how does Schwab get paid? Because they're, again, not doing things for grins and giggles. They got big buildings out in California. I've seen them.
They do. And they make their money on volume. So they want transactional fees. So they want to be, they want to have the most transactions. There's fee compression that's really that's been occurring within the brokerage custodial world. So fees are very narrow, but they are looking to have the most number. So if you have to have wire transactions, or you have, they have a, again, their bank money sweep that they would make money from people that would hold funds in the bank. That doesn't apply to us, but that's how Schwab makes their money.
So Schwab's not charging us anything for this, not charging the city anything for the service. I don't know if they're charging you guys.
They will charge nominal fees on different types of transactions.
Okay.
But it could be like $5, $12. But on a $600,000 transaction, it would have a very nominal impact on that transaction.
Okay. And what other communities other than the city of Sylvania do you guys, or other governmental entities, school districts, counties, whatever, do you guys work with?
We have 16 different public entities, primarily not as many in the Northwest Ohio area, but we have Sylvania Township as a client. I'm not exactly sure. We're pretty confidential with who we share our client list with, but I'd be happy to provide that to be distributed.
Just curious.
But we have 16 different public entities that we work with. It represents, as far as the assets under management, the $2 billion we have with public entities, about $200 million for public entities.
And just out of curiosity, because I'm sure it sounds like things are pretty much under control, but I always like to learn from other organizations. Are there other people, other entities, public sector entities, obviously having the same limitations that we do, doing things differently that we may want to consider?
We actually, there's another firm. It's in Cincinnati. It's Red Tree Financial. They're an independent investment advisory firm as well. They do a lot more work in the commercial paper space than we do. We monitor that. We look at that closely. We really respect the work that they do. That's their primary focus, our public entities. At SJS, it's a part of our business. But through the post-financial crisis from 2009, basically for the next 10 years, interest rates were at near 0%. A lot of the public investment advisory firms only lost a lot of business because fee compression with interest rates at 0.25%, you can't charge 0.25%. So if that's your only line of business, it put a lot of those businesses at risk. Red Tree shifted their focus from more brokerage to advisory during that period of time and captured a lot of that business that started changing hands. But they're, again, they're... I would say commercial paper would be the only thing, and that in this environment too can be questionable.
And you showed us that benchmark chart. I'm not sure that I completely understood that. So were we trying to get to the yellow line, or were we trying to get to the blue lines?
The blue lines.
Okay, that's what I thought. I'm just trying to make sure I understood.
I said that this would be, and I'd be happy to have a discussion. I know that we have some time constraints, and I'd be happy to discuss further what some of those differences are and why. But it's a function of the duration and the speed, magnitude, how rates changed, and the ability to go and buy and sell and adjust your duration to be right on the market. If you're not right on the market, then we just want to be between those lines and know that when things normalize, we want to be tracking again closely to the blue lines.
Sure. Any other questions from members of council? Kirk, thank you very much for your time. We certainly appreciate all the information and the presentation.
Thank you for your time.
Just out of curiosity, did you provide Toby the slide deck? Can you provide Toby the slide deck?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Toby, if you could send that out to everybody, that would be great. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Toby, is UBS here?
Well, you saw how long it took me to do it.
Because I got the impression that they weren't, so maybe they're outside.
No, no problem. Yeah, I'll do that. Sure, sure, I'll do that and I'll send it to you.
Sorry, Mayor. Just taking longer than I thought.
We'll start when you're done.
It's a relatively short agenda, too.
Yes, it is.
Hi, everyone. Mayor, members of council, I want to introduce Mike McCullough. He's with UBS Investing, and they're in the city, obviously, on Pearl Street there. Mike's been with the city, again, longer than my time. Started when he was with Fifth Third, he handled the city's account at Fifth Third. He's now had several years at UBS. They're one of our largest taxpayers, UBS is now, so it's a good company, and just introduce Mike.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Should I just have Chuck the space bar?
Just push the down button.
Nope.
What you got to do, Chuck?
I may have messed it up.
Technical assistance is out at the down area.
This thing right here, the down arrow's up. Okay, got it. Thank you. Sorry about that, everyone. UBS is the largest bike ring in the world, which is kind of neat to say in little Savannah, Ohio, where we are right now. But it's pretty awesome that I've been doing this 23 years working with Ohio Public Funds. It's pretty much all I work with. But to be able to do it with a firm that provides an amazing toolbox for me and my Ohio Public Funds is pretty awesome to be able to do that in Northwest Ohio. But in any event, just a few couple quick facts about UBS, the fact that we have offices all over the world. Our group that we work with in terms of building our portfolios and the access that we have is out of New York, UBS Americas. But our branch here in Sylvania, we get the same access that you would if you were working out of Dallas or San Francisco or Chicago, anywhere else, which is really, really nice to have that. It's a little bit different feel than what I had at say, Fifth Third, you know, Fifth Third Securities. So anyway, that's a little bit about us here, and I'm going to try and do the right down arrow. There we go. Our team, so I construct the portfolios for all of my Ohio Public Funds. Our team is a $3 billion asset size team, and then the Ohio Public Funds that I manage is just under a billion. I've been doing it again, like I said, 23 years, mostly with cities, counties, school districts, townships. Those are the bulk of the Ohio accounts that I work with. Okay. But Christy, Alicia, Judy, and Heather are all on the team as well. Chuck, you know Heather? Heather said, yeah, for sure. So, small world. And we work as a fiduciary. So, what that means is that we charge an advisory fee, we get everything at cost, and my goal is to make sure that the account grows. But first and foremost, safety of principle is number one, and the good news for Toby and I is that we have to follow the Ohio Revised Code. You've probably heard this before, but the Ohio Revised Code is about the safest of a framework of an investment policy that you can find out there, really in any state. So it allows us to invest in treasuries, in money market funds, government agencies like Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Federal Home Loan Bank, which have the implied backing of the United States government, and then certificates of deposit, okay? But in the investment policy, which the city of Sylvania adheres to the ORC, the Ohio Revised Code, just like many other cities, counties, school districts, townships, et cetera, liquidity of funds, safety of principal, those are the, that's the bedrock of what Toby and I have to follow. And third would be the yield. So as long as we are meeting the liquidity needs of the city and we have safety of principal in terms of the assets that we're investing in, that are backed by US government or FDIC insurance, then obviously trying to optimize the yield. But we work, my team works as a fiduciary, to the city of Sylvania. So it is absolutely my best interest that the account grows, as much as possible within that tight framework of the investment policy, the safety of the investment policy. Okay? Access to markets, I talked a little bit about this before. Because of our sheer size, we're one of the big four broker dealers out there, so our access is second to none. I have a Bloomberg at my desk and can talk to just about any trader in the street when we're trying to find the best absolute yield for our client. Okay? With the city of Sylvania, what we try and do is get a minimum of multiple bids based on what the liquidity needs might be for Toby and the city in terms of the framework of our laddered portfolio, if you will. Okay? We're trying to sort of navigate the yield curve, what interest rates are doing, which has been a very big challenge in the last 12 months. Rates have gone really, really high. They've gone a little bit lower. They've gone high again, and there's a lot of stuff going on with that. I think that, you know, the traders that we have, you know, at UBS and then the access that we have to everybody else in the street really helps in terms of getting the best yield possible based within the framework of the investment policy that we have to adhere to. Okay? And then our strategy, and I've talked a little bit about this before, but again, just trying to meet safety of principal, liquidity needs of the city, and then trying to maximize the yield. Okay? We try to target a duration that we think is going to be best in terms of what Fed, everything kind of revolves around Fed policy and central bank. And the Fed moving interest rates lower or moving them higher. And, you know, Toby and I talk about there's a liquidity bucket in terms of cash and then the investment bucket. And what we want to make sure is that the liquidity bucket is there, but it's maximizing its return and it's there for any projects that are upcoming. But then with the investment bucket, making sure that if we think interest rates are going up, we're going to short the duration. And if we think interest rates are going to go down, then we're going to maybe lengthen the duration a little bit. Again, all within the framework of the policy, which is allowing a five-year maximum. So during COVID, for instance, in 2020, the Fed cut interest rates by 175 basis points overnight. We shortened the duration, and thank God we did. So throughout 2020 and 2021, we went from about a 2.4-year duration down to about a year. And as Fed started to raise rates last year, we were very poised to take advantage of that because we had a lot of maturities coming due because we shortened the duration. So that's what I mean by, in terms of the strategy and the stuff that Toby and I talk about and why we do what we do, the decisions that we make. Okay.
So what's our average duration now?
Yeah, so this next slide here are the highlights. I put that in there. Right now, the portfolio duration, which is right under the red line, is 1.49 years. So duration is taking into account, let me say it this way. If you take a teeter-totter, okay, and you have equal amounts of dollars, you know, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year, 5 year investment, that fulcrum, or the middle of that teeter-totter, is going to be at 2.5, 2.5 years. When we talk about bond portfolios, we like to talk about duration, because duration takes into account cash flow that you're getting on each of those investments with pay coupon interest payments, sometimes semi-annually, sometimes monthly. So that's going to move that fulcrum a little bit shorter because you're getting cash flow before maturity, if that makes sense. Okay? So our fulcrum is actually 1.5, 1.49 years. So you could theoretically say that the average of our longest maturities is in that 3-year range. Okay? We do have stuff that's a little bit further out, but again, we short the duration. We were closer to a 2 to 2.25 year duration when COVID hit, and we shortened that up over the next year and a half, 2 years. We're now starting to look at lengthening that a little bit because interest rates are at 17-year highs. We want to take advantage of that.
and we think that the Fed will likely cut rates at some point, either at the end of this year or the beginning of next year. It's not set in stone, but that is a little bit of our educated guess at the moment. So the core portfolio value is at $14.3 million. Our estimated annual income for the next 12 months is at $298,000. So you take the $298,000, you divide it into the $14.3 million, and that's how you get the current yield of the portfolio, 2.85. Okay? I like to talk about the market value of the portfolio because the market value, we don't want to shy away from that. It did get hit in 2022 because the Fed raised rates by 400 basis points. And I'm very proud of the fact that we kept a very strong current yield and very healthy current income of the portfolio, even though we withstood a headwind of 400 basis points in increase. I mean, I don't know if we'll ever see that again in the next 30 years, where the Fed is that aggressive in terms of raising rates. So think about that. During COVID, we were staring down looking at 3, 4, 5 year investments that were paying 50 basis points or 0.5%. Okay? Thank God we didn't lock a bunch of that stuff in. We shorten duration and we get out of that, and all of a sudden, you know, the overnight benchmark rate goes from 50 basis points to 4.5% in less than 10 months. So our interest income has not quite doubled, but it's up probably 60% from a year ago, which is awesome, and we expect it to go up. Tony probably doesn't want me to say this and set it still, but it's going to grow up even more next year. Why? Because take a look at the maturity schedule here. So 21% of the portfolio has yet to come due this year. 21% equates to,
I just have to get my reading glasses on,
equates to about $3 million that we still have to invest this year. That's going to go into these new higher rates. And these new higher rates are north of 5%, which is awesome. And then next year, we have another $5.6 million that's coming due, which works out to be almost 38% of the portfolio. Put those two numbers together, we have half the portfolio put it, that we're going to be able to put to work in these new higher rates. So that's why I feel confident standing here and saying that that interest income is going to go considerably higher a year from now. Okay? Any questions on anything I've covered so far? You probably heard that, you know, in terms of safety and soundness, all the investments are book entry in the city's name, backed by United States Treasury, or the government agency that we may buy, like a Federal Home Loan Bank, or the CD, making sure that we're within 250,000 FDIC insurance limit. So nothing is held in UBS's name. We keep very little cash. As a matter of fact, if we have more and say $10,000 or $15,000 in cash, which sits in the UBS bank deposit, I end up moving that to a government money market fund, which is daily liquid. And the only reason I move it there is because it's a better rate than what our bank deposit is. And currently, right now, the money market fund's at 4.77%, which is great.
So, Mike, in regards to that thought process, so one of the words that we kept hearing from others was the word custodian. How does that work with UBS?
UBS is a custodian of the city's investments.
Okay.
We safekeep the city of Sylvania's CDs, agencies, treasuries, all their bond banks.
So how, I know you're at a completely different scale than everybody else we've talked to, as large as UBS is. And I'm not saying anything's wrong here. I'm saying, just asking the question, if UBS starts to run into trouble, how do we know that our money's safe, that the taxpayers' money is safe?
Because they're backed by the holdings. What we need to worry about in this room is if the U.S. Treasury goes under. I'm not trying to scare anybody, because I don't think that's going to happen.
We can't control that. That's beyond, that's above our pay grade.
We have a lot of other things to worry about that, if that happens.
Right.
If UBS were to go under tomorrow, your assets are covered and backed by the holdings that you hold, the U.S. Treasury, agencies, and CDs. There is no exposure whatsoever to UBS.
So, Mike, you're saying there is no third-party custodian. You are the custodian.
That's right.
So the $1 billion that you said that's inside your box, your portfolio, Obviously, we've got a chunk of that, but clearly not the largest chunk, I would assume. And it's always important, and I'm sure Toby's asked this question, but what are other entities doing that we're not, that we may want to consider?
Frankly, nothing.
Okay.
There's nothing that you need to do. And I work with a lot of cities within a very small shot of here. Okay? And again, 95% of my clients are cities, counties, school districts, townships, etc. And there's the Ohio Revised Code is so safe, as long as we adhere to that and we don't go outside of that scope in terms of the types of investments, your money is backed by those very safe treasuries, agencies, CDs, money market funds.
So how do we benchmark ourselves against, what structure does that look like? Well, you talked about the duration curve changing, which is fine. How do you measure you against somebody else inside UBS or somebody else that you're competing against day to day out there in the market?
Yeah, for sure. That's a great question. And the treasury curve is going to be the ultimate benchmark because everything is so safe under the Ohio Revised Code that anytime that I make a recommendation to Toby or any of my clients, I show where the current treasury curve is at that moment. 6 months, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4. So that Toby knows exactly where interest rates are. And then what I try to do is make a recommendation, maximizing the Ohio Revised Code. How much yield can we get out of the Ohio Revised Code, so to speak, right? Is there an agency that's going to be outpacing a treasury, or is there a CD that's going to give us a better yield? Because we're allowed to do those. So let's try and get as much yield as possible, because we all know at the end of the day, that framework is very, very safe. I think what separates a good portfolio manager from one that's not good, it's one that can read the tea leaves and understands the ever-changing dynamics of the yield curve and Fed policy and what's happening with rates going up and rates going down. And 2022 exposed a lot of bad bond fund managers, including some of the banks, and those made headlines. Silicon Valley Bank, that CFO that's running that bond fund, gone, fired, horrible.
Should be.
This is a perfect example of what not to do. He went long duration and locked in yield out to that 7 to 10 year mark, and it's all underwater. And they couldn't find anybody to bail them out, and they would have had to sell positions at significant losses. So I think that, you know, that's what separates the people that were doing it right over the last 2 years versus people that maybe weren't doing it right. So my benchmark would be, I would love to see what the duration of the other two portfolios are, and I'm hoping that they're just as good as ours, and I'd love to see what their interest income was as well, based on the dollars. How much did they earn per million?
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Sure. So you mentioned an advisory fee. Obviously, I appreciate that comment. So we have a contract with you guys? Is that how that works? I mean, is this just an ongoing evergreen kind of thing? Just keeps rolling over? How does that work?
It is not a contract per se. If Toby is at any point not happy with my services, the city of Sylvania can pull out at any time. You are not locked in whatsoever with me. And I do that because I think that's the right way to do business.
And if it's in UBS's name, even though, well, if it's custodian under UBS, and we say, see you later, guys, how does that work, even though we've got a CD for 250 grand that's in City of Sylvania's name?
Yeah.
But it's custodian by UBS. How does that work if we say go away?
So you would transfer those assets in kind to another custodian.
Okay. Any other questions from members of council?
Very informative.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Appreciate the information. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for letting me come out.
And slide deck wise, I'm assuming Toby's got this slide deck. If he could send that over, that would be great.
Yeah, he does. He has it digitally, so does Mr. Silver.
Okay, super. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
So before we close this, it sounds like they're all doing the same thing, pretty much.
Pretty much. Yeah.
I think, and, you know, I think we can, the yield curve stuff is interesting. I remember from my old finance days, that was, those durations are pretty short compared to.
Right. So, Mr. Schroeder stepped out, but I know one of the things that we spoke about, not at this finance committee meeting, obviously, but at the last one, was looking at the investment policy for the city. And it's been some time since we've had a look at that. And I know at the time I asked Toby and Leslie to take a look at what we might need to modify or change. And I don't know where we're at in that process specifically. So before I say, hey, I'd like to set another finance committee meeting, I want to make sure you and Toby have enough time to put together some recommendations back to council on what needs to be shifted or whatever changed and what have you. So I don't know what that time frame is. Would you prefer to get back to us about that? I mean, you know, I don't know whether you want to.
I don't
want to let this go too long.
Right. I would say, you know, I've started doing research on what other municipalities' investment policies look like and things like that. So, you know, 30 days would be good for me. I would assume, Toby, if that meets with your time frame.
So let's shoot for then basically the first meeting in June.
Yep.
Unless Mr. Schroeder says, you know, that's not going to be enough time for him.
I think that would be
okay.
Unless he's going to be out of town, that should be sufficient.
Okay. Fair enough. Any other items come before the finance committee meeting? Hearing none, there's no action specifically. This is more informational for, I thought it was very helpful for me anyways. Some of you, your eyes may have glazed over, maybe not. But I appreciate the opportunity to hear from those three firms and learn a little bit. And do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion to adjourn by Mrs. Westfall, second by Mr. Hanen. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion carried, and we're adjourned at 7:50.